This is episode 430, dated Friday, September 19th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Good to be here today with all of you. Happy Friday. This is episode 430, dated Friday, September 19th, 2025. And before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host for the show, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how are you doing?
Can you all hear me?
No, you
can't.
Can.
We can.
You can. Okay. So
yes.
Thank you, Bob. We're fine here. We're still having late summer weather. We're sort of waiting for the rainy season, but it hasn't happened yet. So it's sunny and breezy and 70 degrees or 65 degrees and, it's still beautiful out here, but a month from now, who knows?
True. Just like here today, we are enjoying summer weather. It's warm in the 80s, a little humid. The sun is out and, we'll see how long that lasts around here as well. Before we continue, allow me to thank people who make it possible for our show to be available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our editor and producer. Thank you for what you do, along with the media sources that we have that air our program. Thank you very much for what you do as well. And Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. She archives our podcasts on my website. To find them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I also want to say hi to Cindy, who is our facilitator for today's program. Thank you, Cindy, for what you're doing for us. We appreciate it. And we also appreciate Herbie for being our streamer. Thank you very much, Herbie. And because we are being streamed, allow me to give out my email address for those people who wish to send us comments about our show. We appreciate hearing from our listeners. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. bobbranco93@gmail.com. bobbranco93 is one word. I have two listeners that I want to give a shout out to today, Linda McKinney Lambert and Deborah Joyce. Thank you very much for your support as always. We have,
and before you go any further, Bob, I
yes.
just wanted to let you know, because I don't always forward you the messages, that my mom, Nancy Hart, who is 93 years old, regularly listens to our show and always sends nice things about you and me. And so, hi Mom. Hope you're doing great.
Happy birthday, Nancy. We appreciate you. Okay. So we're going to have a returned guest who's been on the show several times in the past. You may know her outside of the program as well, especially if you live in the Boston area. Her name is Donna Halper. She's a professor. She's into media relations. I think she's broadcasted here and there as well. Donna, it's always a pleasure having you back.
Well,
thank you.
I'm grateful for the opportunity. Can everybody hear me okay?
Loud and clear, Donna.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
So, yeah. Donna.
It is indeed true. I am a professor. I was a broadcaster for 4 decades. I still get on the air sometimes on WBZ radio, here in Boston. And I also do a bunch of podcasts, webcasts, and a lot of public speaking. I give Zoom talks, et cetera, and et cetera.
So Donna, when did you start teaching media history or media relations?
Oh Lordy, it was a long, long time ago, back before the dinosaurs came. So I had been in broadcasting, for 3 decades, but I had a couple of master's degrees because I'm one of these lifelong learner types. Maybe some of you are as well. I always like to learn new things. And one of the people that I worked with said, hey, you know, with all of your experience, why don't you teach a course somewhere? And I said, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. I could do that. So in 1988, I applied over at Emerson College here in Boston, which is a giant media-related college, expertise in all kinds of media and the arts in general. And I started teaching communication courses and media courses, had a lot of fun with it, did it for a while, and then eventually the industry that I was in, at that time I was a full-time broadcaster, but the industry had started changing. We've talked on this show about media consolidation, about how giant conglomerates were gobbling up smaller stations and et cetera and et cetera. And I was by that point in time a radio and a management consultant, and I was working with mostly small and medium market stations, and they were getting all bought up. So suddenly by the 1990s, what had been just like a little fun sideline to keep active and to make sure that I was understanding what the younger demographics were interested in, suddenly it was like, ew, I'm going to need this to make a living. Now, I had been at Emerson for a while, okay? And in fact, I was instructor of the year at Emerson in 1995.
Well deserved.
Didn't matter. Didn't matter. I was an adjunct and I didn't have a doctorate degree. And that was a big deal back then, still is in a lot of places. And so it was that after 30 years away from school, I went back to college at the age of 55, and I got my PhD when I was 64, and I became a full-time professor of media studies. Worked at Lesley University, L-E-S-L-E-Y. It's named after a couple of sisters who founded it over 100 years ago, worked at Lesley for 15 years, got laid off. These things happen, me and 25 other professors, and I was able to latch on to Purdue. I'm currently working for Purdue Global, which is their online college. I have students from all over the United States and even some that are international, and I'm getting to teach communication and media courses that way.
So my question to you is, if you were to totally start your teaching career now, in other words, you're 30 years younger, you've gone, but you're starting to teach media and communications and so on and so forth, what do you think might be different from the way you taught 30 years ago?
Well, the way I teach has never changed, okay? And I want to just say something and just put it out there. There are a lot of myths, some of which are politically motivated, about what's going on in the classroom, okay? And we can find extreme examples wherever we go from both sides. I've never been into that, okay? I've always believed very strongly in critical thinking and in presenting both sides of the issues. Mom raised me like that. Didn't matter what the subject was I was teaching, we always looked at a variety of perspectives. So that would not change. But you're asking a great question. Once upon a pond in a kingdom far away, there were caps on how many stations could be owned by the giant corporations, okay? And then gradually those caps were loosened. There was also this thing called the Fairness Doctrine. And
yes,
again, like it, hate it, it's been misrepresented everywhere. But there were rules about the fact that you did, if you were doing the news, you did have to present both sides of the issues, okay? And there were still talk show hosts from each side, and nobody was stifled, and et cetera, and et cetera. But my point is, it was a different industry. It all started changing in 1987 with the end of the Fairness Doctrine. Ronald Reagan campaigned on it, and he made it a reality, and that led to one-sided talk shows. Whether you think that's good or bad is a debate we can all have, but I'm just giving you the history here. Now, one-sided broadcasts are not new. I'm going to tell you something that you won't hear anywhere else, but you'll hear it from Auntie Donna because I'm a media historian and it's what I do. Okay? Can I take you in a time machine back to 1939?
Sure.
Long before any of us were born. So it's 1939 and a guy by the name of Larry Flynn gets into a fight with his boss, John Shepherd III. And John Shepherd owns a bunch of stations. And he is using his stations in 1939 to put his favorite politicians on the air and to keep the politicians that he doesn't like off the air. So if anybody tells you this has never happened before, yeah, it has happened before. And eventually, Larry Flynn goes and starts his own radio station, like Harumph, and he calls it Mayflower Broadcasting. And that leads to the FCC jumping in with what came to be known as the Mayflower Decision. And the Mayflower Decision said radio stations are not allowed to editorialize or take stands on the issues. Harumph. Well, no broadcaster liked that. That was going way too far. It was kind of like, can't you and, you know, Larry, can't you and John Shepherd just get along? It's like, why do we have to be in the middle of this? What happened in 1949 was the Mayflower ruling was finally reversed, and it led to the Fairness Doctrine. And that's the reason why the Fairness Doctrine was kind of considered a compromise. It's like, yep, go report the news. Go say whatever you want to say on talk shows. Just make sure there's both sides.
But so then, in 1987, yep, who was it that spearheaded the dismissal of the Fairness Doctrine?
By and large, Republicans. Okay? Now, this is not Auntie Donna saying, I love Democrats. No, this is just this one came from the right. Are there other things that have come from the left? Absolutely. But historically, yeah, this one was kind of like a Republican hobby horse. This was like, we are being stifled. Yep. No, there were lots of right-wing talk show hosts on the air back then. But they wanted more opportunity to present their points of view, and they succeeded. And ultimately, talk radio became 95% right wing. There are parts of this country where that is the only viewpoint that you will hear on the radio.
Now, by the way, where I live in Coos Bay, Oregon, I'm one of that part of the country. The only exception is NPR.
Yep.
And the only thing that NPR has around here are Morning Edition and All Things Considered.
And that's another reason why this current administration worked so hard to defund.
Yep.
NPR and PBS. Now, again, however you feel about this administration or NPR and PBS, in many parts of the country, they were doing God's work. They were providing fair and accurate news. Okay, maybe you didn't like their talk shows, but they were providing fair and accurate news. And I've seen the research. More than 40% of their listeners were Republican. And in some parts of the country, they really were the only game in town. And now there are a whole bunch of small rural stations in red states that are being shut down because of this ruling. Okay? There's a real problem in terms of allowing equal access to the airwaves. But I don't know if I've answered your question. So one other thing. So one thing I would tell my students is everything is different. We are living in an era where we are much more polarized than when I was growing up. Now, interestingly enough, when I was growing up, the airwaves were mostly conservative. Then we kind of took a swing such that some outlets became liberal, others became conservative, but because of the Fairness Doctrine, you had to present both sides. Once that ended, we started getting a free-for-all. and we started really going into our own corners, such that I have friends who never listen to anything or watch anything other than liberal sources. And I have other friends who never watch anything or never listen to anything except conservative sources. I think that is horrible for our democracy. So I would tell my students, I stand on what I taught you 30 years ago. You really need to look at both sides, or you're going to end up demonizing the other without having any understanding of what they actually believe, because the loudest voices and the most extreme voices are not necessarily representative of you and me.
So, Donna, with that in mind, what is your take on the developing situation with the FCC today, where I heard that our president is asking the newly appointed head of the FCC to, for lack of a better expression, bring traditional radio back?
That's not our current president doing that. The AM, there's like a long name for it, but there have been folks, and I'm one of them, who have been big defenders of AM radio for decades. My senator, Edward Markey, M-A-R-K-E-Y, has been a champion of the AM. I think it's called the AM Revitalization Act or something like that. So I think we need AM radio. I think we need FM radio too, of course, and online radio and et cetera, but there, again, there are parts of the country where AM is the one thing you can still get because reception is a problem. So
I want to respond to 2 points. I want to make an amendment to my last statement about the FCC. They're also, generalizing. I said radio. I think they want to bring back traditional media. That's what I should have said. Not so much traditional radio. This comedian that got fired, whatever his name is.
We're going to talk about Jimmy Kimmel in a couple of minutes.
Jimmy Kimmel. But here's what baffles me. You mentioned AM, and I keep hearing advertisements all the time about, let's tell Congress to keep AM radio. Tell them to pass that bill. I've been hearing about this bill for months and months and months.
That's my point. It's been going on for like about 10 years.
When is it going to be read?
The chances are real good that it will pass probably in the next couple of months. There's a lot of support behind it because many senators in red states live in those areas where it is very rural, where reception's a problem, and also AM radios in cars for the same reason. You know, as somebody who believes in freedom of choice, to me, this is a choice issue. People should have the right, if they enjoy AM radio, they should have the right to listen to it. Now, 10 years from now, will AM still be necessary, or will it be an anachronism? I don't know. I can't see into the future. But all I know is that right now, there are still people who care about it. So, fine with me.
So, I want to sort of continue on that sort of trajectory that we started about how would you teach differently. One of the things that strikes me is when you started teaching, news was a big deal. People really, you know, they had news divisions and they reported the news and it was a money-making event. They had commercials. They made money off of the news. And even if they didn't, it was still a civic duty. And now what I think one of the major problems that we're having is a lot of these news sources are sort of bobbles on larger corporations who need the support of the current president, or it doesn't matter who the president is, to get certain things through the SEC or to get certain business.
Yeah, we're going to. That is a conversation that really gets to the heart of one of the downsides of media consolidation.
Right.
And we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes for real.
Because I think that's a major change.
Here again, we're talking perception and we're talking technology. Right now, some of you are listening online. years ago, this program would have been on the radio. Now, in some places, it may still be. I'm saying you tape it, you record it, it's on the radio. But I'm saying that years ago, the only way that you would have listened to it is we would all have gathered in a studio and we all would have recorded this program. I've done this many, many times. Today, here we are. I'm in Boston. You're in, you know, Oregon. Somebody else is in East Hutzeplutz, you know, wherever you are. We can just connect online. Now, one of the things that has changed is the online world. And this is probably not the time or the place to get into a discussion about, is the online world good or bad? I can give you good, I can give you bad. But I can give you different. Back to when I was a kid. So when I'm a kid, it's the 50s and the 60s, and I'm a kid in college, okay? And I want to know what's happening in Vietnam. How do I know? Oh, Walter Cronkite tells me, that's how. Okay? And the CBS Evening News, and ABC's World News, and NBC with Huntley and Brinkley, and radio and television were mandated, as you said, to broadcast the news. It was an expectation, and it was the only way you could get information other than waiting for the news magazines and waiting for the newspaper. Today, and this is both good and bad, today, oh, Jimmy Kimmel just got fired. All right, I don't know who the guy is. Let me go online and find out who the guy is. And maybe the source I get isn't a news source. Maybe the source I get is opinion. Jimmy Kimmel's the worst guy who ever lived. Or Jimmy Kimmel should be nominated for sainthood. But in either case, I'm not getting Walter Cronkite. I'm not getting Huntley Brinkley. I'm getting a new expectation that I will be given instant information, and that not only will I be given instant information, but that it will conform to what I already believe. So if I'm a good lefty, I'm like, oh my God, this is awful. If I'm a good righty, I'm like, yay, we got him. So that's not news. News looks at both sides of the issues. And sad to say, there are fewer and fewer people who are interested in getting objective facts, and more and more people who are interested in getting the stuff that tells them that their side is right. And that is so harmful to democracy.
And part of the thing that I find so disturbing, you know, you say, rightfully so, that we should make every effort to hear all sides of a story. The problem with that, and I do a lot of reading on both the right and the left, is that a lot of the stuff is tailored to a certain audience.
Boom. That's
who has part of their shtick want to hear the other side trashed.
That's what I said. Yep. You're making my point.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest difference to me as a media historian. Now, you know, Auntie Donna is 78. I'm still adorable. I'm still working. I'm still out there doing what I do. But I'm 78. And one of the good things about being 78 is I can look back on past decades and I can go, ah, this is where it started to change. For good or for bad, this is what happened. And one of the things that I think is kind of sad is the death of expertise. There used to be people that we trusted and believed in. Now, I know that there's a discourse of, oh, you know, you guys ruined it all because you can't be trusted. Now, if you tell people over and over that, ah, these people from that side can't be trusted, pretty soon folks are going to start believing it. And that leads to confirmation bias, where you seek out sources that reinforce what you already believe. There are still very good reporters out there, but more and more people prefer commentators, okay? More and more people prefer opinion folks, as opposed to, here are the facts, and now let's look at what these facts mean.
So
am I making any sense?
By no, you're making very good.
You are.
I guess my question sort of becomes, you know, if you were, it's the same question I sort of started with, you know, so you're in this place of polarized reporting, which is what the audience seems to want. And you're teaching media history and how to be a savvy media consumer. How do you sort of encourage people to do things they, you know, to get both sides of the story and to do all those things without when both sides are demeaning the other side? I mean, that's part of the reporting.
Well, there again, one of the things that I'm a big fan of is fact checking. Okay. I somebody sends me something online and they'll forward this to everyone you know. And the first thing I do is go, no, I'm not forwarding this to everyone I know. And the second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to see if there's even an ounce of truth in what you just forwarded me. Because 99% of the time, the stuff that is posted online is intentionally to be inflammatory, outrageous, and to get you upset. Oh my God, the left is celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. No, they're not.
No, that's all I've been hearing. That's all I've been hearing.
Celebrating anything. Go ahead.
That's all I've been hearing. The left is celebrating. And
but it's a lie.
They're burning flags. They're doing this.
It's a lie. It's a lie. And it's intended to get you upset about those people. May I tell you what is actually happening?
The yes, please.
Responses, I'll be happy to do it. I'm a media historian. I have no horse in this race, by the way. Okay? No horse in this race whatsoever. I am not on one side. I am not on the other side. I am on the side of facts. I like facts. Facts are good. Here's the facts. There are some provocateurs, people who make money on getting you outraged, okay? Both sides have them. But yes, there are provocateurs on the left, and they have absolutely been celebrating. Now, do they make up the left? No, they do not. But it's useful for the provocateurs on the right to ignore the times when they've done the same thing and to point fingers at the extremists on the left. So let me tell you what's actually happening. What's actually happening is there is not one Democrat, not one, from any position of leadership who has celebrated the death of Charlie Kirk. Okay, Barack Obama didn't do it. Joe Biden didn't do it. Kamala Harris didn't do it. The folks in Chuck Schumer, none of these folks celebrated anything. In fact, quite the opposite. Most of the folks that I know, while they did not agree with Charlie Kirk, and we can have that discussion, what they were upset about is, boy, there's too many guns in society, and there is too much of a tendency for extremists on both sides to want to settle differences by using violence. What did Nancy Pelosi's husband do to anyone? Paul Pelosi is in his 80s, and a guy who identifies with the president went to Pelosi's house and hit him over the head with a hammer. And yes, I saw some people on the right going, yeah, that got back at Nancy. But the vast majority of the folks that I know on the right were like, ew, have we come to this? This is how we're going to settle our differences? So that was the real discourse that was going on in the circles that I hang out in. Now, are you going to find some crazy people who say crazy things? Sure. But again, you got to ask yourself, do they represent the views of an entire group of people? Or do they just represent the group that wants to get you angry and outraged so that you'll click on their site and they'll make a few bucks? I don't click on their site.
So the bottom line.
I just want to finish one thing. Okay.
Go right ahead.
As vehemently as I disagree with a lot of the stuff that Charlie Kirk said, I felt terrible when he was shot. I really did. He had a wife. He had two small children. It's outrageous. But the person that killed him was not the left. The person that killed him was the shooter, the person that killed him. And I still think it's awful, and I still feel terrible about it. And right now is not the time to be getting into, well, look at all the people from that. They're not suitably mourning him. I feel terrible about it. I really do. And I still think the bigger question is, what are we going to do with all the guns in society? And what are we going to do with all of the angry voices that encourage violence?
So basically the bottom line here, I'll run the risk of saying this. Social media is one of the main reasons why this country is divided.
Boom. You get it. Okay? And again, social media is neither good nor bad. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Twitter, form, you know, X, whatever you want to call it. I'm sometimes on Facebook. I'm sometimes on Instagram. I'm a public person. I've got to be in all kinds of places. But I'm very careful about the kinds of discourses that I follow. I don't want my blood pressure raised. I want facts. I want information. Yes, I want to know what the reactions are. But also keep in mind that on social media, anybody can claim to be anybody. We happen to know for a fact that there are bad actors from Russia, bad actors from China, who are trying intentionally to sow division. So use your social media wisely. Rely on sources that you trust and separate opinion from fact.
Well, this is one of the reasons why the FCC is doing what it's doing.
Nope.
Well, but are they? That's,
nope.
That's the question.
That is not the reason the FCC is doing what it's doing. No offense to you.
That's all right. Well, why do you suppose the FCC is taking the actions that supposedly they're taking? I'll use the word
because
supposedly.
Donald Trump told them to.
Yeah.
Brendan Carr is a big Trump supporter, and he has said that he will take stations off the air if he decides that they are being critical of the president. No, not what the First Amendment says. First Amendment says that the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press will not be abridged. I'll say two words to you. Greg Gutfeld. Greg Gutfeld does a talk show on Fox News. I don't think he has ever said anything that I ever agreed with. But you know what? I do not want him taken off the air. I don't. Okay? I don't want Jimmy Kimmel taken off the air. If we're going to go after the comedians, if we are going to use the power of the state to police speech that our leaders don't like, what separates us from Russia?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No offense. And this goes back to the issue of the, you know, more and more power going to fewer and fewer people in the media business. And the media business is not just the media anymore. There are other businesses as well, which make a lot more money than the media does. And they, I expect the same thing would be true if somebody else was the president, not President Trump. But President Trump just seems to be, you know, taking more advantage of this. You know, they need certain things, certain government agencies to approve certain things in order for them to make more money. And if the media is in their way, they're just going to tell the media to get lost, basically. And that's kind of scary.
Here's the thing that really keeps me up at night. In Hungary, Viktor Orban allegedly has freedom of the press. But the fact is, just about every single media outlet is owned by a supporter of his. So anytime he wants something taken off the air because he thinks it's too critical, no offense, I don't want the government. I don't care who's in power. I don't want the government deciding what I should or should not listen to. I don't want the government deciding what I can or cannot say. That's dangerous. And the road that we're heading on right now is that every major media outlet is about to be owned by either a supporter of Donald Trump or by somebody who has business in front of Donald Trump, which gives them an incentive to take anything or anyone off the air if he doesn't like it.
Well, let's talk about
what makes us different from Russia if that's the road we're going down.
Right. Well, let's talk about iHeartRadio. Where do they fit into this discussion?
Same problem. Same problem. The only difference is iHeart has a number of financial issues right now that have kind of kept them from being that influential. The vast majority of the push in the influence game right now has been in these giant tech conglomerates, the social media owners, and the folks that own television networks. Radio has kind of been on the sidelines unless they are part of the portfolio of what some of these giant tech folks own.
Let me find out from Cindy if we have anybody would like to ask you a question, Donna. I'm Bob
Rankin. Well, I hope I haven't offended anyone, by the way.
I don't think you have. This is a great discussion. You're listening to In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco. He's Peter Altschul. Our guest is Donna Halper, professor of media relations and former broadcaster. And I'm sure there are people who would like to talk to you, Donna. So let me find out. Cindy, do
we have there are people who would like to throw things at me, depending.
Oh, I think you're great.
Yeah?
Yes, you do. Janine? Go ahead and unmute.
Hello, Janine. You are first up.
Hi, everybody. I have to agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I'm glad you brought up about what makes us different from Russia, because that's pure sense. It's being censored. So in your opinion, what do we do about it?
So the first thing we do is what we're doing. I want to hear Republicans, because right now, this is on them. I want to, and again, don't read me the wrong way, please. There have been times when the mob was being run by Democrats. I never said otherwise. But right now, the mob's being run by Republicans. So if you live in a district where you have a Republican representative, call them up and ask them to take a stand for freedom of speech. Because that's what really matters at this point. There have been very few Republicans that have taken that stand, even though when the shoe was on the other foot, they were furious, okay? When they thought that there was cancel culture coming from the left, they couldn't have been more upset. Now that it's cancel culture coming from the right, let's not say a word. But the fact is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if it's wrong, which in this case I believe it is, it should be wrong for everyone. I do not want to have the Republican Party standing for censorship. I'm old enough to remember when the Republican Party did not believe that at all. So let's call our representatives and say, hey, I want to hear from you. First Amendment. No censorship. Maybe the comedians are mean to the president. But comedians have been mean to presidents for like 100 years?
Exactly. Okay.
It's their job.
And by the way, Charlie Kirk was certainly not a soft-spoken, thoughtful guy. He used a lot of the same language that comedians use to trash people he didn't like.
I didn't want to see him censored either. Exactly. I'm real consistent on this issue. I'm a big believer in freedom of speech. Charlie Kirk had every right to speak. You know who else has every right to speak? Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, you, me, and everyone else. And if we're going to suddenly start favoring certain kinds of speech and disfavoring others, again, what separates us from Russia? So yeah, call your congressperson. Ask them to take a very strong stand in favor of freedom of speech. Not just speech that they agree with, but speech that is like, oh, this comedian had an opinion. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Or this provocateur had an opinion. Yeah, whatever. Either we're a free country or we're authoritarian. I do not want to live in a country that is authoritarian, because that ain't good for any of us. So yeah, it starts with us speaking up. It starts with us letting people know that this is not okay with us. And it starts with us being willing to support those people who do stand for freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and fairness in the media, not using the media as a political weapon.
Anything else, so, Janine?
Go, Janine.
I guess she's all set. Or is she? Janine?
I'm all set.
She's still unmuted.
I'm all set. I'm just sitting here saying
I hope I answered your question.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you very much
thank
for your
you.
Participation.
Thank you. Plan my writing campaign.
All right. Cindy, do we have anybody else?
Yes, sir. Okay, Stacy, go ahead and unmute.
Yeah, they just defunded, you know, National Public Radio and National Public Television. And they also took off local, I think they're taking off local news off of my channel, CBS. I don't see it in the afternoon. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that's happening is CBS just got sold, and it got sold to a big ally of President Trump. Large donor, large ally. And they're going to take CBS more to the right. Again, not terrifying to me because I grew up when CBS was kind of to the right. But again, the worry for me is that friends of the guy in the White House, and you're right about this. I think it was Bob that said this. The person in the White House has tremendous power and can really weaponize that power if they so choose. What worries me is to surround yourself with people who have big money, own tons and tons of outlets and tons of social media, and can determine what we hear and what we see. Because that's not good either. Again, I'm fine with right-wing views being expressed. Let a thousand flowers bloom. But keep the news, and stop punishing those people that you think are against you. You need those people. They make you honest. Okay, like I always ask my students, when you evaluate me, tell me what I could be doing better, because I always want to do things better. I know I'm not perfect, okay? I may be adorable, but I'm not perfect. So if you can tell me something I can do better, terrific. But to just try to stifle someone, one of the things Charlie Kirk did that I think is so wrong on so many levels, he started a list where students could anonymously basically rat out their professors and advocate for those professors being fired. I don't think that's good, to be very honest with you. The last thing we need is lynch mobs going after certain professors. Now, are there professors who I think probably shouldn't be in the classroom? Yep. That's probably true. But again, to make it viewpoint specific, oh, I think this professor is liberal, so let's get rid of that. What good is that? To me, that's McCarthyism. And unfortunately, Mr. Kirk thought that was just great. Let's go after those liberal professors.
So what do you think of what's going on at Harvard right now?
I think it's exaggerated, but I also think that Harvard has a long history of anti-Semitism, ever since the early 1900s. Back in the 1920s, they had quotas for Jewish students.
Yep.
Oh, I could tell you stories. But this ain't about anti-Semitism. This is about the fact that the president believes that universities tend to be liberal and they tend to vote for Democrats. And so if he can use state power to crush universities, so much the better. I just want to be able to teach my students. I'm not anybody's enemy. I'm just an educator. And again, if we're going to pick and choose, oh, well, we're going after this university, and here's a good excuse to go after it. Now, that having been said, Has there been anti-Semitism at Harvard? Why, yes, there has been. But you know what? There's been anti-Semitism in all kinds of places for decades, and I haven't seen anybody saying anything about it. But I've also seen anti-all kinds of things. If this is really about anti-Semitism, let's get together a bunch of people that deeply care about the issue. Let's work on how we can make the courses better. Let's work on how we can improve the way the university puts things forward. But how does canceling medical funding help it solve anti-Semitism? I've got friends that do medical research at Harvard that are doing life-saving work. And because the president pulled their grants, now they can't do that life-saving work. This gets me nuts. This is using a bazooka, okay? I get it. He's mad at Harvard. Fine. But don't take it out on the scientists that are trying to come up with cures for cancer. How does that help anybody? So like I said, I don't think any of this is about, oh dear, we care deeply about anti-Semitism. Because if we really did, maybe I was asleep when they had the panel where they all sat down and discussed solutions. All I'm hearing is people going on talk shows and huffing and puffing. And that's not going to make my life any better, and I'm Jewish.
Anything else, Stacy?
Yeah, there is. My friend's Jewish, but she agrees 100% with you. I mean, she's a Christian now, but she's Jewish by birth, and she was raised Jewish. So yeah, she agrees.
Yeah, this is
I think that anti-Semitism is a real problem. And I think we need to tell the truth about that. But I also think we need to stop picking and choosing who's really addressing the problem and just get everybody together and see what we can come up with. I don't want to see anti-Semitism weaponized any more than I want to see anything else weaponized. Seriously.
Cindy, do we have anybody else waiting?
No, sir.
All right. Well, just let us know when that changes.
I will, because you know it will happen.
I'm sure.
Thank you.
I hope I'm being halfway interesting.
Don, I want to sort of talk about the sort of financial protest, right? So there was a large store chain of them, I can't remember, who put up some trans dress wear, and it pissed off a bunch of folks on the right who stopped doing business with them. And then when this organization tried to remedy, you know, switch back to their own position, that pissed off the other side. And now that company's business, stock business, has dropped quite a lot. And I guess the question I'm asking you is, I would assume that taking money away from a vendor that you don't like politically is also free speech, correct?
I'm certain that it is. Okay. There are certain companies that maybe I don't want to shop there. But here again, I don't want the power of the government, and I don't care if it's Democrats in office or Republicans in office. I don't want people telling me what to listen to. I don't want people telling me where to shop. Really, I don't. And let me say something about trans people. A lot of people are making tons of money monetizing this issue just like they're monetizing everything else. There are vanishingly few trans people in America. I've had trans students. They're like everybody else. They want to live. They want to be respected. They want to be treated kindly. Okay? Now, I would be lying to you if I said I understood how one gets to be trans. I do not. Okay? That's way above my pay grade. I don't want to get into a whole medical conversation or a psychological one or anything else. But I do know that for an awfully long time, hundreds of years, people have felt they were born in the wrong body. Okay? We find evidence of this going back to the Middle Ages, for heaven's sake. So turning this into an issue where you're persecuting people, I still keep coming back to
stop.
Treat other people the way you want to be treated yourself. I mean, above all, be kind. If you don't understand something, ask questions. But it still doesn't give you the right to judge. I mean, the Bible that I read is very clear about God not wanting us to judge. One of God's names is Dayan Emet, the righteous judge. Last time I checked, God is the judge. It ain't me. So I'm trying real hard to look at some of these situations, no matter which side it's on, and just go, yeah, okay, too much sound and fury. Let's just treat people as human beings and go from there.
Okay, Bob, you have 8.5 minutes.
All right. All right. Thank you, Cindy.
So I want to go back to sort of solutions and you've talked about, and you know, being really smart about, where you find your facts and doing, you know, some due diligence. And that's, of course, really good advice and really important advice. The problem, as I see it, is that's getting harder and harder to do.
Oh, it really is. May I point something out there? And this is one of those things that both sides do. When you are getting something on social media that is a quote that is intended to outrage you, try to find the original. It may take you a little digging, but gradually you'll get used to it and you'll find the, oh, okay, here's a place where I can get where the what the person really said. And very often, when you look at the entire quote in context, it's like, oh, why is everybody getting upset about this? This is just something that maybe I agree with or maybe I don't, but it's not as terrible as people are making it. So I saw a lot of that with Jimmy Kimmel. I've seen a lot of that with a lot of famous people where somebody will send around a quote and I get people saying to me, how can you support this person? Look at what they said. And I'm like, no, you look at what they said, because when you look at the whole thing, it isn't even that terrible. We're living in an outrage culture. We really are. And it's going to give people heart attacks, and I can't go for it. So yeah, my first advice to everyone, is this what the person really said? And my second advice, what was the context in which they said it?
And I guess my other, and I have made the decision until future notice is to get off social media entirely. But I'm not in a position that you are, Donna, because you have to do it for the work you do. And I find myself being a much better mental space than I was when I was on social media. But it's still hard to find good sources of news. I don't care if you're on social media or not.
Well, I think there's a lot of good sources of news, and I can certainly make recommendations. But back to what you just said about getting off of social media, what I think you need to get off of, not you personally, but all of us, get off of the places that generate outrage, okay? Like, I have thousands of followers, and I'm not bragging, okay? A lot of people know me from my work in media. A lot of people read my books. A lot of people read my essays. A lot of people know the work I do in baseball history, this and that. So the people that follow me, they tend to understand right from the jump. If you start name-calling, if you start insulting people, conversation ends immediately, okay? I do not want to participate in it. On the other hand, you want to give me your opinion about Jimmy Kimmel? You want to give me your opinion about name 17 other people? Fine. Let's have a debate. Let's be reasonable. But let's not get into like this whole schoolyard bully thing, okay? That's what I object to more than anything. And that's where Brendan Carr is using the FCC in a bullying way. And I think it's wrong. So I try very hard to create a social media environment where we talk about stuff all the time, but there's a certain tone that we all buy into, and we're all there to exchange information, not to demonize and insult. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean,
when I was on Twitter primarily, I saw very little of that.
Yeah, but don't forget, Twitter got bought up by Elon Musk.
I was on it before Musk. But anyway, you're right.
Yeah, but it's my Twitter is now not just like one, you know, like everybody gets a chance. It's taken a side, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, given how everything is sort of, the power isn't being conglomeratized into one place, how do we deal with that? Because I don't see how media can do its job if it's going to be more and more involved with other parts of the business world that needs government support to do one thing or another. Do we need to do some antitrust stuff? How do we get things?
Well, see, right now you're not seeing any of that enforced. What you are seeing enforced is if the White House likes you, then you're favored. If the White House doesn't like you, then you're disfavored. And that is not how it should be, no matter who is in power. So I'd love to see antitrust stuff and conflict of interest stuff getting back to, oh my God, you know, you can't be governing yourself. You have an axe to grind. You have a horse in this race. But right now we're not there. So again, it's up to each of us. You read something and it just seems demonstrably false to you. Get your facts in order, find out what the facts are, and then get in touch with the author. I do that all the time. Okay. Read sources that can be relied upon. I'm a big fan of the Bulwark, B-U-L-W-A-R-K, thebulwark.com. Okay. Now they are mostly a bunch of righties, but they are never Trump righties. Okay. They're people who are Republicans, but who believe in the stuff that Republicans used to believe. And they have some very good discussions. Do I agree with all of them? No, but a lot of their writers are not into name calling. And I appreciate that. Okay. I'm the same way with The Week. The Week is a magazine, a news magazine, that presents the right side, the left side, and then gives you a summary so that you can just make up your own mind. Okay?
As it should be.
Yep. Time magazine is very good at stuff like that. The New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal, their opinion pages, biased, but their news reporters are still out there trying their best to do their jobs. And make sure you're separating commentary, which is nothing but opinion and everybody's got one, from fact-based, we actually went out and reported on this, and you'll be a lot better off.
And the other thing I would
say, 1.5 minutes.
We have about a minute to go.
Yeah, the other thing I would say, having moved out here to Coos Bay, Oregon, I'm not quite sure how to say this, so I'm going to say people just don't follow the news very much out here. And on one way, that kind of worries me, but on the other hand, they're much healthier.
Yeah.
They're much more involved.
But it also makes them easier to mislead.
It is true. But you know, but they are more connected with the community. They're more community minded. They're not sort of.
I understand. And we need to get back to that. May I just close with one thing?
Yeah.
30 seconds.
Thank you for this conversation. I've tried to keep it as nonpartisan as possible, but this is a conversation that all of us need to continue to engage in, whatever side you're on. We need to find areas of common ground and continue to keep the lines of communication open. If you're celebrating Jewish New Year, I wish you a happy and a healthy.
Yeah, especially
and
you too.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You're welcome. And I was going to say your opinion would be reinforced if you read Peter's book, Creating Common Ground Where Contention.
Oh, Peter's
the title is Riding Elephants.
Riding Elephants. Yeah. It's about creating common ground anyway. Donna, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back at some point. And this was a great discussion. And keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You, Peter, thank you. And thank you, everybody else. I'm Bob Branco. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. See you next week.